at least a dozen times in the course of reading the Bhagavatam and going through descriptions of, like this one with Vidura, but other personalities who are super elevated personalities, and yet it describes yet again that they overcame their residual attraction for the material energy and, you know, broke through to the other side, so to speak. So there's degrees of perfection, and it's hard to articulate exactly what this, your question, what's purification from what? Purification from residual involvement in the material energy. And so the option of that is rapt attention upon the personality of Godhead, and something short of that is being distracted by the residual actions of past material involvement. In there are four nutshell verses, or chatur shloki verses of Bhagavad Gita. And the last of them, tesham evanukam partam aham ajnana jam tamaha. In the commentaries, I gave a week-long seminar just on those four verses from Bhagavad Gita once. And I did it by studying very carefully the commentaries of our acharyas. And what they explain is Arjuna has a doubt, and the doubt is that even when one comes to this position of fixed in devotional service, what about the fact that in the past there have been so many other than devotional service activities performed? Is there not some residual tendency? And does not that residual tendency sometimes appear in the life of a devotee who's fixed in devotional service? That's my doubt. Arjuna has this. So they phrase their commentary as Arjuna has this unspoken doubt and Krishna's eradicating the unspoken doubt. So Krishna is then saying, rest assured, do not worry, ma suchaha, that this residual tendency, I personally will take care of it. Jnana dipena bhasvata, with the shining lamp of knowledge. An example is given that just like there may be some rotting something in a room. I don't know. Rotting something in the room. And you clean the room and take the rotting something out of the room. And so the room is clean, but there's still this odor in the room. What about the lingering odor? So even for someone who's fixed in devotional and knowledge is awakened and transcendental bhava, because Krishna says that in the previous verses, still there's this odor. There's this residual tendency. So long, lifetimes and lifetimes, and countless lifetimes involvement with the material world. What about that? So Krishna answers, I'll take care of them. Personally, I'll take care of them. That's his reciprocation with his devotee. So, but that's a very intimate thing. Krishna is personally taking care of residual tendencies. But so that's some understanding. Further purification. Therefore, the emphasis, it comes in Prabhupada's purports here in this chapter, at least five times, sustained hearing. Sustained effort, just like effort to chant attentively. You ever work on that one? So we all work on that one. And it requires a real sustained effort. It's not just for one round or one day or 1 week. It's really, it takes a sustained effort. It really helps to have good association while you're, to help you sustain that sustained effort. And then, so, then Krishna takes further purification. Yes?
You talked about the mood of a devotee when he takes care that he shouldn't agitate the mind of others.
Yeah.
We also talked about a sadhu being very straightforward.
Yeah.
Gives. No, we saw the qualities of the guru.
Yes, yeah, this is a very delicate area, isn't it? So someone could take one and be a softy, and someone could take the other one and be a hardy.
Yeah.
A sharp, you know, cutting person. And think, you know, is there in the Bhagavatam, cutting person? Is there in the Bhagavatam, being very soft?
The personality is like Vidura. They are a perfect sadhu, they can cut through. And they can present things, or they can retain themselves when they don't want
to. Exactly.
But personalities who are lesser Vidura are not even clear Vidura.
Yeah.
From the teaching point of view, how do you say a person has to act in his pretty Krishna consciousness? Preach without even agitating the minds of others, but still has to be the truth. For the spiritual Krishna.
My understanding, I can only offer some very simple guidelines. And one of them is, well, here's better to err on the side of caution. And then another is that each person has their particular style. Each of us has our personality. Like it or not, that's the way it is. We each have our personality. I like it. But some people don't like it because some personalities are really problematic. We each have our personality. And so some will find this effective and some will find that effective. Just like even in the transcendentalist category, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one style and Bhaktisiddhanta was another style. And they're perfect transcendentalists. We will not venture into the area of faulting one and approving the other, or vice versa. This is right and that's wrong. So each have our personality. Then a third point is that Krishna consciousness means to be not only thinking of the other person, but what will be pleasing to Krishna. That's the check and balance system. Because Prabhupada was very, very expert in knowing when to be very cutting and when to be very soft. Even Vidura, in the presence of Duryodhana, in the presence of the Pandavas, he didn't disclose. He was expert because he was guided by Krishna. And that can't be, there's no, you can't legislate that one. You can't make a rule for what Krishna wants. Krishna indicates what he wants in the heart of his pure devotee. And so back to the first one. For those of us that aren't pure devotees, better err on the side of caution. Yeah.
Really, I decide not to ask questions.
Okay. Would you like to speak? What happens?
It triggers something.
What happens what?
Something triggers one. When somebody speaks like you, then I'm bound to speak something. So what came out from here that, let me comment one for his one.
Okay.
There was a saying Bhartrihar, and he has written very nicely. Satyam bhuyat puyam bhuyat, na bhuyat satyam puyam. Puyam cha na mitram bhuyat is dharma sanatana. Now, I won't go in detail to this one, but
I thought you wanted to speak.
Uddhava is very great personality. And I find Uddhava used to mimic the dressing and clothing of Lord Krishna himself. What's your thought?
Why did he do what?
Why he mimic the qualities of Krishna himself?
Did he mimic the qualities of Krishna, or he exhibited the qualities of Krishna?
I don't know, because he was not Krishna. So I just say that he used to, like, put the clothing, dressing, and kind of something that people get confused, even gopis get confused.
Yeah, they were confused.
Whether it's Krishna or Buddha.
They were confused initially, but because his complexion was like Krishna's, all I can say is this, the simple answer. As Krishna said, because Uddhava was completely beyond any touch of the modes of nature or material conditioning or anything like that. So whatever Uddhava did was controlled by Krishna. So we probably have to go and ask Krishna the answer to that question.
Very good.
Because some persons Krishna had this way, and some persons Krishna had that way, according to his pleasure. Here's the statement in the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami stating it, in the mind of Krishna he considered, there's no one in this world like me. So let others become inspired. I mean, perhaps, this now it's conjecture, speculation time. Perhaps Krishna was thinking, as I inspire, let Uddhava inspire. He so much resembles me, not only in appearance, but in quality. Let others be inspired by Uddhava, like they're inspired by me. Somehow it brought pleasure to Krishna, because Uddhava wouldn't do anything for any other reason. But attachment, he could dress differently. Is it not? Residents of Vrindavan, who are more exalted in their attachment than Uddhava, dress differently. It's due to Krishna's desire for Uddhava to serve him in a particular way. That's my understanding. Krishna wanted Uddhava to serve him in a particular way. And so Krishna, being in his heart, inspired him to serve him in a particular way. And Uddhava, being absolutely subservient to Krishna's desire, however Krishna wanted him to serve, he did that.
So I read at one place that Krishna gave his garments to Uddhava to wear. So of course it wasn't mimic, it was Krishna's desire, as Maharaj mentioned. And Uddhava relished the remnants of Krishna's, you know, all different garments. So he would dress up like also very opulently sometimes, because he wore Krishna's garments. Krishna gave him personally.
That's what I read. Okay, I believe it. So, Maharaj, question comes, what other qualities did he exhibit from Krishna?
What did he? Lot of qualities. He's in Sakya Ras. Like, he's like Arjuna. Arjuna has also a lot of qualities of Krishna. And Uddhava also exhibited a lot of qualities, noble qualities of Krishna. Many qualities. There's a whole list of qualities. Actually, this is the whole topic, the qualities of a pure devotee that we're discussing.
Yeah. So when we get together again, what I tomorrow morning, the first thing we'll do, you can do a little brush-up homework, and you can go through that section, and we're going to make a list of the qualities of a sadhu. And then we'll keep that and carry it with us until the next session, because it, you'll see why.
Just, in regards to her question, would it also be alright to say that the conversation between Vyasadeva and Naradji, or the wonderful instruction between Arjuna and Krishna, and as Prabhuji pointed out, the instruction that Sukadeva Goswami Pad gave to Parikshit Maharaj, is it safe to conclude that it is a part of Krishna's Kripa Leela for the benefit of the West?
Yes, and more than that. There is something further in all of that. And so the something further is the intensification. Perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. So that perfect doesn't fall in the category of purification. It falls in the category of intensification. But in Vidura's case, he was taking it as purification. So then we gets into real fine analysis of was Vidura in the position of a pure devotee? Was Parikshit Maharaj in the position of a pure devotee? Was Vyas in the position of a pure devotee? And so forth. We can get into real fine analysis. But in general, your answer is very appropriate. But then we would have to look at perfection. To achieve, the Bhagavatam is inducing us to come to the stage of perfection. And that perfection is it's identified where, in at least in this chapter, the specific terminology is rapt attention on the personality of Godhead. And we could say that may not have been the position of Uddhava to the degree that it was after pilgrimage and meeting Vidura, meeting Uddhava, and his discussions with Maitreya, because it's specific at the beginning of the chapter, he came back after being fully satisfied. And the commentary that Prabhupada gave was that he, by the assistance of Maitreya, he came to the position of firmly convinced that the unalloyed devotional service of Krishna is all in all and nothing else is required. And then he was satisfied. Then he could come back and do his duty. Okay. And roll. Srila Prabhupada ki perceived by his family members as no longer just a family member, but as a sadhu. And actually this question was along the line of the same question that Hema asked yesterday evening. And that is, we have examples in this chapter. There's two, Vidura and Maitreya, both of whom were already exalted personalities in their own right. But through association, they themselves made further progress in spiritual life and developed further in the qualities of a sadhu. So, and in the course of responding to that question, I mentioned that there are many examples. When you read the Bhagavatam very carefully, you find many such examples, and the language of the Bhagavatam is that they became purified. And again, just like Hema's question, we already think of those persons as really, really, really advanced souls. But then something residual was remaining, and through the course of association and further progress, they entered into some other higher realm of devotion. Just like, for example, so there, this handout that you have a copy of. Nimai Pandit, in his pastimes, Lord Chaitanya, in his childhood pastimes, of course he's the personality of Godhead who doesn't require anything, but at least in his pastimes, through his scholarship, he became very, very, very much revered and recognized by all. And yet he didn't show the symptoms of great devotion. And on the pretext of going to perform the Shraddha ceremony for his father, at Gaya, he met Ishwarapuri, and he completely became a transformed personality in his lila. His ecstasies of pure devotion became manifest. Then we also have another example of Suta Goswami. The example of Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami was the son of Romaharshan. And Romaharshan was very elevated disciple of Srila Vyasadeva. When Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas, each of the four Vedas he then entrusted to one disciple who then had his assistants, and their service was in perpetuity, for henceforward. They were to maintain that particular Veda. And it's a very technical thing that they had to do. One devotee that studied this in depth, they would not only learn the Vedas, but they would recite them basically forwards and backwards. They would recite them in several different ways from memory, just so that like a cross check, so that it would not be forgotten, or would not, even if it was written down, so that it would be retained. So they were highly qualified personalities. And when Vyas compiled the Puranas, he entrusted the Puranas to Romaharshan. He was in charge of seeing to the integrity of all the Puranas. And his son, naturally, learned from his father, Suta, learned from Romaharshan. And so Suta was a highly qualified soul. But Suta heard from Shukadeva Goswami when he narrated to Maharaj Pariksit. He heard the whole discussion, very much like Maitreya, who heard the discussion firsthand between Uddhava and Krishna. And so from that, then Suta Goswami, he's glorified at the beginning of this first canto of the Bhagavatam as the most eminent person amongst all of the assembly of sages at Naimisharanya. And what was that one unique qualification? He heard. And it also says he assimilated Shrinvanti Gayanti Grananti Sadavaha. He assimilated what he heard. He had become a realized, perfected soul. How? Through association with a sadhu. And Prabhupada loved to describe the position of the six Goswamis. It was one of, I've noticed particularly when listening to Prabhupada's lectures, that when he spoke about this, his voice thrilled at just describing how qualified Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they were from Saraswat Brahmin families. They were, in effect, the prime minister of the government, where there was a king, Muslim king, but they were basically, they were doing everything. He spoke seven languages fluently, and material qualifications like anything, and brahminical by their birth, highly intellectual, highly learned, highly qualified, great personalities. But then in the association of Lord Chaitanya, they gave all that up and went further. And what's, so Hema's question again, what's that further? What do they, going beyond the, any sense of worldly attachment and involvement and simply attached to the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. And then they were further instructed by Lord Chaitanya, both of them, Rupa and Sanatan. It's recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita, one of Kalki's favorite sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita these days. Lord Chaitanya instructing Sanatan Goswami. And through that association and service and training, and again the theme of this chapter, sustained hearing, sustained association, sustained hearing, staying in that position till they became blessed by Lord Chaitanya to realize the import of those messages. And then they carried those messages forward. Or Raghunath Das Goswami, you can just keep going on. He's the son of one of the wealthiest people in all of India. Something like if the sons of Birla or something like that. Or Tata or Hinduja or something like that. And they became, they gave it all up and became a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Not only the path of renunciation, but he heard and he realized through the association of Lord Chaitanya and specifically through Sarup Damodar, through his association, he came to understand very, very confidential matters about Lord Chaitanya's life through that association. He achieved the perfection of life through association of a sadhu, Sarup Damodar. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami also, the son of the chief priest of the Sri Rangam temple, Venkata Bhatta, and his son Gopal. So, very, very high birth, very elevated qualification. But, through Lord Chaitanya's association, he went further and further and deepened his understanding of pure devotion to Krishna and became one of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. And so many nice examples are there for appreciating how, regardless of one's spiritual or material qualification, the association of sadhu, so valuable. And therefore, the, as the beginning of this chapter instructs us, it's very important to properly receive. That's the message of this chapter. We should very carefully receive that personality and with rapt attention, with ardent hearing, hear the message of pure devotion from them and try to assimilate those instructions. So that was the first section. So now, just to review the second section, as I mentioned last night, Ashish is going to assist us here. And I'd like to make a little inventory list of things that we understood from the section we covered yesterday evening on the qualities of a sadhu. So I warned you we would be doing this, so here we are doing it. And maybe somebody can keep this on a piece of paper afterwards or something like that, because later on in this chapter there's more when Narada appears on the scene and his qualities are also identified. Qualities of a sadhu. If a sadhu is so important for spiritual progress, how do you tell one when you see one? What do they look like? You know, what are the symptoms of one who is a sadhu? So we're going to ask for volunteers, and Ashish is going to write it on the board.
Equal to all.
Equal to all. Yeah.
Straightforward.
Straightforward.
very peaceful.
Well, we've got to see if we can. Straightforward, very peaceful. What was yours? That was yours. Very peaceful. Yes.
Always thinking of the Supreme Personality of God.
Yeah. The language that Prabhupada uses, rapt attention upon the personality of Godhead. How fast can you write? Okay, he's got three. Okay.
He's very sensitive towards his sleep. He's careful about his behavior and about how others would perceive his behavior.
Okay. Well, the language that the Prabhupada used, I'll just modify it if you don't mind. Very considerate of the impact of their actions and speech upon others. Yes?
He should know the philosophy of Srimad
Bhagavatam. Okay. Know the teachings of the Vedas thoroughly.
Be merciful.
Merciful. Yeah. Are we being merciful in letting you? Okay, he's got merciful.
Tolerant.
Tolerant. Sanjay?
He turns the places into places.
Yeah. Tolerant. Keep going. You heard what he said. Back here. Equanimity. Well, he has equal to all. Does that work?
I felt like equal and happiness of distress. Nothing.
Okay.
Unaffected
by the modes, unmoved by happiness, unmoved by duality, beyond duality. Okay.
There is Krishna within the heart.
Unaffected by the modes / beyond duality, carries Krishna in his heart. Okay, it was something from over on this side. Yeah.
Considers feelings of others.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the same as considerate in actions and speech and how that will impact on others? That's the same one? Nishkam, desireless.
Speech necessarily afflicting to others.
Yeah, that's important. Got it? I'm lifting in their speech.
It's detached.
Okay.
Near mama.
Detached. No. Yes?
We help others see the spiritual origin of this.
Okay, that's important. Helps. Huh? Her thing. Helps others to see the spiritual alternative. Prideless. Quite an inventory list we're growing here. Do you have a comment?
Sustained attention. Spiritual enlightenment.
Sustained attention. That's one? You're giving two of them. Sustained attention. Mind always fixed in Krishna. Is that the same as rapt attention?
Yeah.
On the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what's the other one?
Spiritual enlightener.
Spiritual
enlightener.
So give spiritual enlightenment to others, which is helps others to see the spiritual alternative. That's okay?
Detached from worldly matters.
Detached, we got it. At least we should have it. Yeah. Truthful. Yeah. truthful. Sanjay?
Compassionate.
God is merciful.
Merciful / compassionate. Yes. Do we have humble? Humble actually was one of the first ones. Prideless / humility. Actually, they're different, but related. Yes.
Convey the message as it is.
Okay.
Communicate the message as it is.
Okay.
Fearless.
Yeah? Yeah? You're just stretching. Okay. Sense control? No.
I said samtyag.
Detach.
Yeah.
Expert in giving or presenting spiritual.
Helps others to see the spiritual alternative. You want something different than that? You got the pen, you're holding everybody up here. Make a decision.
No.
Something different?
The only thing is expert. You used yesterday the word is. Should be expert also.
Okay, it's expert in helping others.
Yes.
Yeah.
Simplicity. It's there.
Is it?
No, straightforwardness is there.
Oh, okay.
Can we see the qualities which we didn't see yesterday?
Huh?
Can we see the qualities which are the qualities of duties but we didn't cover in yesterday's session?
We're doing pretty well here.
You have control in the sense center?
Yeah, sense control. That she mentioned that. Sense control, right here. Number. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah.
I mean, surrender to Krishna and spiritual authority.
Yeah.
Surrender.
Is that there? It's not there.
No.
How do we miss that one? Kind of like rapt attention on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but this describes the mood. Surrender. Because Kamsa, he also had rapt attention on the Supreme Personality. He wasn't surrendered. Yes?
Following the principles as per the scripture.
Ah, you remember that from our Bhakti Bhiksha class on Thursday. Yeah. Strict follower of principles.
Good listener.
Yeah. Like Prabhupada said about himself, good listener. Okay, yes. Yeah, detached. Detached. Okay, so there's our... Not maybe there's some others, but
someone.
Good list. Huh?
A non-possessive can doesn't possess anything.
Non-possessive, so detached?
Yeah.
Non-possessive, detached?
Forgiving.
Very important. Very important. Yeah.
Soft-hearted.
Well... You, oh boy, look at this. You got two colors. Okay, let's close it here.
I'm out.
23, we're getting in, on the margin over here. So, we'll come back because there are, why don't you now move so people can see the board. They want to look at the board. Thank you, Ashish. So along with these qualities that we've listed, we'll hear this chapter describe qualities of Narada, then we can then compare the qualities that are presented here. So this is, it's a very, the composition of the Bhagavatam flows very, very naturally and very intelligently and very wonderfully, because after receiving these nice instructions, even in the form of a story about the qualities of a sadhu, the next thing we're going to hear is the message of a sadhu. So, those of you that have these papers, there's some discussion topics that we'll cover at the end. So if you want a sneak preview of the questions we're going to be discussing, of course we'll take your questions, but I want to cover these things as well. You can take a glance at them. Now just before we move into the next section, I wanted to review one thing, and that is a point that Prabhupada makes strongly in the chapter, and that is that the making of a sadhu, in the case of Vidura, it was not a matter of high birth, although in another sense, a transcendental sense, he was Yamaraj. So Yamaraj can take birth however he likes and he's going to do a good job. But at least in terms of the pastime, Krishna's pastime with his devotees, he took birth in a Shudra family, and although he was very wise, he wasn't a liberated, perfected soul. But when he did receive the association of such a personality and absorbed the lessons and training and instruction from that person, then he was considered by the author, by Vyasadeva, and by Yudhisthira and the Pandava brothers as a perfected liberated soul. So the qualification comes to one by good association, by sadhu sangha, and not by birth or erudition. And again, this is a nice point that Kalki was bringing up in one of our discussions, that Kalki's a very deep thinking person, by the way, I'm finding that out. Very nice association. Many times, I'll just repeat, you know, in the Kalki Sampradaya here, Kalki's point was that many times we mistake a very well-developed material ability, particularly erudition, to be a spiritual attainment when it's not. Or spiritual erudition, great scholarship, even scholarship in the Vedas, may not be at all a spiritual qualification. There are many translators of the scriptures who are great Sanskrit scholars and have come up with all kinds of cuckoo understandings, very amazing twists of what scripture actually says. And on the other hand, there may be persons who can express the essence of the Vedas very, very, very deeply and profoundly, like Haridas Thakur, for example, or Gorkishore Das Babaji in our disciplic succession, who wasn't renowned as a great scholar, having memorized and learned and explained intricacies of scriptural innuendos backwards and forwards, but he knew the essence of spiritual understanding. And could explain it and could remove doubts of others on the strength of that. So these qualities are Of course, there has to be one of the qualities is knows the conclusions. Where is that?
No,
there's one we did write down.
Parampara?
No. Knowledgeable in the Vedas. Mr. Upadhyay gave us that one. It was, yeah, knowing the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, and I modified it, and you were still writing, and I guess didn't get on the board here. But afterwards. Knowledgeable in the Vedas. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji or Haridas Thakur could certainly explain the conclusions of the Vedas. But scholastic ability was not their crowning glory. So we may encounter someone who has something, some glorification of God or Krishna or something somewhere in there. But that may not mean that their position is like this one. Especially one of the betraying features of someone who's very scholarly but is not so spiritually qualified is they exhibit pride. And they'll exhibit finding fault with others that don't have the scholastic aptitude that they have. And those are very telltale signs of a lacking in spiritual qualification. This is, again, this is Koki's wisdom. Sometime you can talk to him about it. He likes to discuss deep understandings of our philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And it's that the first verse is a kind of introduction summary that kind of spans the whole thing. Here's the verse. Thought. So that's the theme. That's the characteristic of Dhritarashtra. Now, backpedal for a moment. The Bhagavatam doesn't say, renounce, just don't care about your family, give up your family, neglect your family duties, and then you're spiritual. That's not the message. The message is overly attached. And so what's proper and what's overly? Dhritarashtra was overly attached. You can look at his, here's a nice example. He was ready to compromise moral principles, religious principles, common sense, everything, because he was so attached to his sons becoming the king. And actually, in his particular case, he was attached to his sons becoming the king because he wanted to become the king. So he couldn't become the king because he was blind. So vicariously, he wanted to do it through his sons, although it was unlawful, and therefore he had to do unlawful things. As we discussed yesterday evening, he was the instrumental person in the plan of Purochana building the House of Lakh. And he was conspiring to have the house burned at a certain time, the dark night of the waning moon. And you know, he was intrigue, murder intrigue, king. So, not very respectable. And how did he become so compromised? Because of overly attachment. So, the Bhagavatam teaches us, not only in this chapter, but throughout the Bhagavatam, that one should very dutifully execute the responsibilities of family life, and do that as a service to Krishna, such that one's attachment to Krishna grows, not that one's attachment for matter grows, but one's attachment for Krishna grows. And inwardly, very important, inwardly one should be practiced throughout the course of family life at cultivating attachment to the Supreme through one's direct sadhana practices, hearing and chanting and worshipping and praying and serving those who are in the position. not just doing things in an external fashion, but cultivating an inward attachment to Krishna throughout the course of executing family duties. Again, Prabhupada was very thrilled at describing Raghunath Das Goswami's instructions, the instructions he received from Lord Chaitanya. Because Raghunath Das was one of those children, one of the sons that parents sometimes get worried about. Very common thing I've experienced in India. It's very nice, parents feel it's very nice if children get interested in spiritual things, but not too interested. Because if they get too interested, then who knows, they might just renounce everything. So, don't be a fanatic. Just be normal. A little interested. Be religious, that's good, but there's a bell that starts ringing and a light that starts flashing if it's too much interest. Because the fear is they'll just renounce everything and everything will be spoiled. So Lord Chaitanya advised Raghunath Das Goswami, don't be like that. So we can take that as instruction for us. Don't. But his instruction was, that was what not to do. What his instruction was exactly this. Perform your household duties very responsibly. But not with attachment, but with responsibility. And inwardly, cultivate deep attachment for Krishna. Day by day, deepen your attachment for Krishna. And the time will come, by Krishna's arrangement, that you will have Lord Chaitanya's association. Be patient. Cultivate Krishna consciousness inwardly. And the same instruction as Lord Chaitanya gave, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gave. He, who was also a grihastha, with how many children did he have?
Ten children,
imagine. Some of you have one or two. Maybe some have three. 10 children. But he very responsibly, obviously very responsibly, because just see, one of his sons became a world acharya. Very responsibly executed his duties. But his inward cultivation of Krishna consciousness was enormous. And from that inward cultivation of Krishna consciousness, he gave such wonderful gifts to the world through his abilities as an orator and a writer and an intellectual. He influenced so many, many people. And at the conclusion of his life, he was in total samadhi. As there was a formal Babaji initiation he underwent, but practically speaking, he was already there. He was just absorbed. Because of that very attentive cultivation throughout his life. Perfectly responsible householder, impeccably responsible householder, and a pure devotee through his careful cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So, now back to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra hadn't cultivated his Krishna consciousness, unfortunately. Because he was overly attached. He was too busy in plotting and scheming and planning and conniving and murder plots and bad things. So his inward cultivation of Krishna consciousness was absent. I'd just like to read Prabhupada's wonderful words in his purport to help present this point. This is the introductory verse of the section. It's very succinct, so you have to listen carefully. It compresses things in a very short fashion. The material body, which is subject to birth and death, disease and old age, is the cause of all sufferings of a living being. Otherwise, the living being is eternal. He is never born,
nor does he ever die. Foolish persons forget this problem. Very succinct. They do not know how to solve the problem of life, but become engrossed in temporary family affairs, not knowing that eternal time is passing away imperceptibly, and that their measured duration of life is diminishing every second without any solution to the big problem, namely repetition of birth and death, disease and old age. This is called delusion. End of paragraph. Imperceptible passage of time. So each of us knows what that is, although it's happening imperceptibly. We're all getting older. The hairs, some of us, the hairs are getting gray. Some saw Kaladri for the first time in a long time. His hairs are white. The temple president in New Vrindavan, very wonderful devotee. And he's past gray, he's white. So time is taking away the opportunity that we have to use this valuable human form of life to take care of the big problem while we're busy looking after the intermediate problems and smaller problems. The big problem may very well be neglected, at least in the case of Dhritarashtra. That's the bad side or the downside of being overly attached. The inward cultivation of Krishna consciousness doesn't take place. Time passes, and life is, whoops, it's gone. Going, going, going. About to be gone. Then, just the opposite, Prabhupada glorifies Maharaj Yudhisthira. The Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was the king. He was everything that Yudhisthira wanted or wanted for his sons. That Dhritarashtra wanted for his sons. Yudhisthira was that. But in contrast, Yudhisthira had no attachment for it. He was very responsibly, very perfectly taking care of his duties, taking care of his brother, taking care of his mother, taking care of his uncle, taking care of the whole affairs of state. Very responsibly. Very expertly, and not at all attached. Not at all attached, and the secret is, he was attached to Krishna. Here's how Prabhupada writes. Maharaj Yudhisthira was fixed in the service of Lord Mukunda, and therefore he had no attraction for even such comforts of life as are available in the kingdom of heaven, because even the happiness obtained on that planet, Brahmaloka, is also temporary and illusory. And he knew that. So he was working very diligently with temporary illusory things, managing them very expertly, but detached. Because he was doing it as service to Krishna, he was attentive. But because it was for Krishna, he was detached. It's mysterious, in one sense, because we don't have the experience of people being very diligent in something unless they're really attached, fruitive. I'm getting something out of this. I'm getting my perks. I'm getting control. I'm getting wealth. I'm getting respect. I'm getting all nice things. And I'm attached. That's why I'm doing it. I'm very attached. Someone that does those things so diligently and is unattached, what's that? It's Krishna consciousness. It's Maharaj Yudhisthira. It's a very, very elevated soul. We primarily have these two examples, attached and renounced. Renounced means give it up. And that's why many parents of young students who are taking interest in Krishna consciousness, when they think, we don't want them to get too attached to Krishna. And then they might just... But that's not the only alternative. Maharaj Yudhisthira example, and so many nice examples, it's very important examples. It's very important to have such examples in society. Again, this is a point that Kalki and I have been discussing. very important to have such people in society. It's important to have people in society who are, Prabhupada also instructed that one should be prepared to live very simply. Very, very simply. Not being in the mainstream of material life and somehow on the cutting edge of Krishna consciousness too. But another necessary example within society is persons who are not competing with the mainstream of material society and are perfectly happy and perfectly exemplary in their conduct, acting very responsibly as a detached householder, very happy to live very simply. It's awesome. It's very inspiring, such examples. If I may glorify Prithu Shrava and Donna Kelly for a moment. Mm-hmm. Such examples for all of the devotees to see. And Kalki and his wife and two children living in a very simple manner. They were very fortunate in this particular location. We have two such very, very strong examples. It's just, you know, take the message that the scripture gives and hold it up to the individuals and you see it's a one-to-one match. Very, very, it's very important to have such exemplary personalities. If I take a moment and say, same with Vishwambar, he completed his family responsibilities and when I was just on Friday evening, I disappeared for a day. I went to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where Dr. Ravi Singh and his wife and three children live. So he's Nittai Gaurasundar. He's a, you know, Nittai Gaurasundar? Yeah. He was initiated at the same time as Jai Gaurasundar and that whole batch out of Baltimore. They moved to Tennessee, and he's a psychiatrist, and he manages three hospitals. He's up to his eyeballs in managing material affairs. And his kids are, they're more mature than most adults I know. It's amazing. Vivek's not here, but I had to ask something. The youngest child is 8 years old, and I called because I couldn't find the number of... Anyway, so there's an amazing family. They're another nice example of, in the mainstream of society, perfectly Krishna conscious, perfectly exemplary. The oldest daughter, when she graduated from junior high school into high school, the principal of the school created an award that didn't exist before, just for her. You know, the best student of the graduating class, you know, the most glorious student out of the graduating, it didn't even exist. She's just so outstanding. They had an assembly just to give her the award. And the teacher was crying, if all the kids in our school were like Shruti Singh, we would have the best school in America. Mother was very happy to narrate that story. With Shruti blessing like anything. So there was one gentleman who's there, who's a Sindhi man, whose son lives here in Chicago, and he was talking about Vanaprastha, which is very much appropriate for this topic, Vanaprastha. So there aren't so many examples of Vanaprastha. This is what he was saying. We have clear understanding what a brahmachari is and what a grihastha is. There are some examples of ideal grihasthas, and we have some examples of sannyasis, but vanaprastha is less clear. Here we have one. On the fast track for sannyas, but take a snapshot while you see it. It's vanaprastha. His children have been educated very, very nicely. They're now properly married. They're very happy, practicing Krishna consciousness very wonderfully. Great success story. And his wife is very happily situated in Vrindavan. And he's cultivating further and further his Krishna consciousness in Vanaprastha ashram.
Only with the blessings of Vaishnavas.
Well, when we have such sincere examples, it's very easy to grant all blessings. So it's my point is, it's, of course, it's nice to appreciate specific devotees, but it's very important to have examples in our midst of persons who are setting that example. That example goes beyond their immediate, who they may speak to and deal with. It's just very, very valuable in society to have such examples. We're very blessed to have such examples in our company on a regular basis. So, Dhritarashtra was on the opposite end. He was materially qualified and overly attached. And as a result of being overly attached, he was blind to the real purpose of life. And life was slipping away. So now here comes, that's the prologue, and here comes Vidura's message. Mahatma Vidura knew all this very well, and therefore he addressed Dhritarashtra saying, "My dear king, please get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you." Now, Prabhupada comments when he addresses him as king, it's with sarcasm. He's not the king. He's a practically failing dead man, almost. He's never been the king. He was, from birth, he was not eligible to be king. But as through his whole life, he was thinking, "I'm king." Called illusion. "I'm this body." It's illusion. "And with this body, I'm the designation of such and such body. That's who I am." It's illusion. "My dear king." Now, who would speak to the king this way? "Get out of here immediately." So-called king. "Get out of here immediately." Now, he could speak that way because he was his brother. Not only his brother, but his close associate. And Dhritarashtra, as we mentioned yesterday, he would regularly seek Vidura's counsel. So there was that relationship. And now, he's speaking this way. So in other words, this is the culmination of, who knows, years and years and years of this kind of thing. So finally, at last, stop. Stop this pretense. Stop this illusion of over-attachment to Dhritarashtra. Get out of here immediately. Leave at once. Just see how fear has overtaken you. Fear. So what is the fear? Someone who's in the bodily concept and is facing death is afraid. Because that's all there is. And there ain't no more. After the body is gone, everything is finished. If that's your identity, and death is approaching, then it's fearful. He goes on. "This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time that has approached us all." The Prabhupada explains that Dhritarashtra was accustomed to taking counsel from Vidura. So as he's saying, "Get out, death is approaching," he was anticipating that Dhritarashtra would turn to him and say, "Is there a back door? Is there an alternative? Is there a way out of here? What can I do next, Vidura? Tell me." So Vidura's closed the door. There is no alternative. You can't, and no one else can help you, nor the combination of the two. It's like the very, very wonderful verse from Prahlad Maharaj to Hiranyakashipu, where Prahlad says, Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova Mito Bipadyeta Grahakritana. For those who are attached to the bodily conception of life, Krishna consciousness will not awaken, neither by their own effort, nor by the help of someone else, nor the combination of both of those things. Matir, not Krishna. Krishna will not appear in the mind. Like with one of the qualities of the sadhu is he carries Krishna within his heart. Well, the opposite is one who is very attached to the bodily conception of life, overly attached, Krishna consciousness will not awaken. And, well, Vidura, maybe you can do it for me. No. And time is approaching as the person, as the representative of the personality of Godhead, taking away the vitality of this body. And it's almost gone. Prabhupada comments that old age is the notice of the arrival of death. Just like if you invited some people for this program in your home and the doorbell rings, that's a sign. Someone's you invited has come. And old age is the doorbell for someone you didn't invite, but they're about to enter. Old age. Well, the graying hairs and the turning white and organs of the body not working anymore, and it's coming for all of us today or tomorrow. That's a sign, and so he's going to point out some of those signs of Dhritarashtra's old age. But he's not heeding the signs. He doesn't want to consider the signs. It's so obvious. He's making no, as Prabhupada is pointing out in this succinct description, making no provision for the approach of death at the doorstep of his life. he concludes the purport, wherever there is the influence of eternal time, there is this set of tribulations. Birth, death, old age, and disease. And all of them are invincible. So we are in the realm, in this Devi Dham, this created region. Time factor is there. And it's passing. And it's passing means, so we have more opportunities for a materialist, more opportunities to try to enjoy, and for the transcendentalist, it's more opportunities to further our progress in devotion to Krishna. And particularly, the emphasis is being made here for the materialist as he's expecting enjoyment. It also means the approach of death is coming. And it's coming. And it's coming. And there's no preparation for its coming for the materialist. Vidura goes on. Whoever is under the influence of the supreme Kala, or eternal time, must surrender his most dear life, and what to speak of other things such as wealth, honor, children, land, and home. Your father, your brother, well-wishers, and sons are all dead and passed away. And you yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you are living in the home of another. You have been blind from your very birth, and recently you have become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened, and your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose. Your liver is defective, and you are coughing up mucus. Wake up! See the signs! Of course, we can see the signs before those extreme advanced stages of old age are there, we can see that time is passing, and which means death is approaching. It's really unnerving, actually. Just it's mind blowing that in material life, which so we're living in a society that's very expert in material life, and most people in our modern times, besides compulsory education from 5 years of age to 18 years of age or whatever it is by different state laws, practically speaking, it's the standard in America that higher education is just a given. I mean, there's exceptions, but that's largely the standard. So from 5 years to whatever it is, 24, 25 years. For what? For preparation for a responsible, capable family life. Because, so we spend 20 years, I may have mentioned this already, how many minutes is that? How many minutes of study? Because we know that it's coming, that we'll have adult life, and we'll have to be lead a responsible life, largely, in a family situation. You have to provide for the needs of the family, and so on. And no preparation for death. No preparation. Just enjoy as much as you can, because it's going to be over, and that's it. It's wow, it's incredible. And that's what Vidura is saying to Dhritarashtra, like this quality. Well, he's helping to detach him, but he's also going to help him to see the spiritual alternative. As Prabhupada mentioned earlier in this chapter, Dhritarashtra was accepting the charitable hospitality of Yudhisthira because he didn't see an alternative. Vidura is going to give him an alternative. But before he gives him the alternative, he's going to help, he's helping to detach him by seeing reality. Just look at it. Also, excuse me, this is text 23. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life? Verily, you are living just like a household dog. Ooh. And are eating the remnants of food given by Bhima. You're sitting at the table here and Bhima's throwing you some scraps like a dog. How, he's a Kshatriya, so Dhritarashtra. Ooh! Insulting words. But he's not insulting him out of malice. He's insulting him, he's speaking these words out of affection. Again, this quality of being equal to all. He's being equal to Dhritarashtra by speaking this way as he was being equal to the Pandavas by protecting them. His affection was equal, but differently manifested according to the situation. There is no need to live in a degraded life and subsist on the charity of those whom you tried to kill by arson and poisoning. You also insulted one of their wives and usurped their kingdom and wealth. You're punishable, but they're maintaining you. Have you no dignity? Despite your unwillingness to die and your desire to live, even at the cost of honor and prestige, your miserly body will certainly dwindle and deteriorate like an old garment. Strong, woo. Very strong. He has to be strong. He's speaking appropriate for the person. And as we see, the person takes it because he knows this is an important dynamic of giving strong direction or strong instruction or strong medicine. There has to be the right relationship in order to be able to do that. Between Dhritarashtra and Vidura, it existed. Dhritarashtra trusted Vidura. He trusted his wisdom. He trusted his affection. He trusted his instruction. He knew that where the place that he was coming from was caring for him. Always that was the place, but Dhritarashtra was unable to hear it because there was still at least his children were alive, his kingdom hopes were there, and he wasn't about to keel over and die. There was still some hope that he could. So he didn't hear it. But now that hope is gone, and he's pointing it out. In the verse, is another one of Prabhupada's favorite words is the word kripana. Prabhupada very much liked to speak about the difference between brahmana and kripana. So brahmana is one who knows Brahman and is attached to what is eternal, Brahman. And kripana is miserly. So when you think of a miser, what's the image that you think of in your mind? Somebody that's got a zillion billion bars of gold and they stick it under their bed or something, or under their pillow or in a closet, or they have some wealth and they put it in a safety deposit box. They never do anything with it. They just get more and get more and get more and hoard it. Don't use it for any good purpose. Just keep it. So he's calling Dhritarashtra miser. And here's some things that Prabhupada says in the purport about interesting language about the kripana is one who has a wrong estimation of his material body. And thus he wants to enjoy sense gratification. He uses the same language again. A kripana, Dhritarashtra is a kripana because without any estimation of his material body, he wants to live at any cost. Without any, has improper estimation of the material body. Well, that means he thinks of it as permanent, although it's temporary. He thinks of it as the means of enjoyment, although that very attachment is the source of his suffering. He thinks it's going to last forever, but it's going to fall like an old garment. Wrong estimation. So part of the message of a sadhu is the sadhu has to waken the person up to what's the reality of this material body, that it's temporary. Remember Prabhupada saying this on a couple of occasions, and directly heard it in a lecture. One of the main responsibilities or duties of a spiritual master is to help the student or the disciple clearly understand the impermanence of this world and the futility of material enjoyment. That's on the downside, or the what not to do side. But it's an imperative lesson. And think about it, especially those of you that are well read in Prabhupada's books. How often does he cover that topic? A lot. He's fulfilling the duty of a spiritual master, because one can very quickly go to some high subject matter and try to relish that high subject matter, but still be attached to the bodily concept in the hopes of enjoying immaterial life. They don't go together. So it's essential to have this very clear and just as sustained hearing on this subject, so it's really clear, so we can let go. We can act responsibly, but not in an attached way, in a responsible way, and cultivate our Krishna consciousness through the course of life. Then here's another place where Prabhupada explains the meaning of kripana. Oh. In parentheses, he puts that Vidura is trying to open Dhritarashtra's eyes so that to see that he cannot live more than his term and he must prepare for death. That such death is inevitable. Since death is inevitable, why should he accept such a humiliating position for living? Human life is meant for finishing all kinds of material miseries of material existence, and life should be so regulated that one can achieve the desired goal. So the regulation of our lives is two parts. It's the material side and the spiritual side. The material side of regulation is to diminish the roar of passion and ignorance, which follows passion, anger and frustration, and to bring the material side of our life to the quality of goodness. And in the spiritual side, regulations of spiritual practice that inwardly cultivate our Krishna consciousness. So, Dhritarashtra didn't do either. So it's an intense effort that Vidura is making, a last ditch effort to save him from falling off the cliff. We're almost done with this section. Vidura continues. He is called undisturbed, who goes to an unknown remote place. But here's the spiritual alternative. Number 13, lucky number 13. He's instructing Dhritarashtra how to become Dhira. He is called undisturbed, or Dhira, who goes to an unknown, remote place, and free from all obligations, quits his material body when it has become useless. The next verse is very important. Next to the last verse. Thank you. Vidura is making a very specific choice, and that is, what's the spiritual alternative he's advising for him? Because there are a variety of spiritual alternatives one can advise for someone. In this particular case, he is advising that he just leaves and detaches himself and tries to fix his mind upon the Supreme. So, the next verse I'll just read. He is certainly a first-class man, which Dhritarashtra isn't, who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of this material world, and thus he leaves home and depends fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead residing within his heart. So in the purport, Prabhupada speaks of three. So this is one of our little review questions for the chapter. So listen carefully. There are three kinds or stages of detachment. One is this one, Dhira, where one experiences separation from one's comforts of life, but does not lament over that separation from the comforts of life, but finds contentment in this new separation of trying to attach oneself to the Supreme. Then another, the next one he indicates, so that's Dhira. The next one is Sannyas. And the way that Prabhupada identifies this is to contrast it from the third one. And the Sannyas is one formally accepts, Dhritarashtra did not formally accept the renounced order. So, the formal acceptance of renounced order, where one has not deeply cultivated Krishna consciousness in the course of one's life, is giving up material life out of disgust for it. But the third alternative is the alternative he's identifying as Narottama, Nara Uttama, the topmost stage of human life, where by very careful, this point of inward cultivation of attachment to the Supreme, when that so careful cultivation grows and grows and fully matures, which is the ideal situation anyone, and particularly for a family member like Dhritarashtra or like Vidura, that in the mature stage of life, that is very strong. And so the temporary stage, which will fall away, it can fall away. And one is fully detached from it. But you have this great treasure of full shelter in deep feelings of love and devotion for the personality of Godhead. So he goes on and explains that actually Vidura was at that stage, and even Yudhisthira Maharaj was at that stage. But Dhritarashtra was incapable of being recommended to do that, because he's 90% finished. He's an old man, very, very old. Pandu's gone, and sons are gone, and everything's finished. His vitality is practically gone. There's not time for that cultivation. And sannyas also. There's Gandhari. What's going to happen? So just at least become undisturbed by your circumstance. That's what he's advocating. So here's the final verse of the section. Please therefore leave for the north immediately. Leave for the north. Where are they? They're in Hastinapur. Head for the Himalayas. Head for the hills. Go. Go at once to the Himalayas in a secluded place and prepare yourself to give up your body detached. And then he says, and don't let your relatives know. Why not let your relatives know? Because if he tries to tell his relatives, I'm leaving. No. You can't go. How are you? You're an old man. You're blind. How are you? So don't. In fact, not only don't tell them, but leave tonight. For soon that time will approach which will diminish all good qualities of men. Specifically, it means Kali Yuga is upon us. So Krishna had left the planet, which marks the end of Dwarpa Yuga. Kali Yuga had begun, and it's going to get worse, Dhritarashtra. So don't wait. Don't tell anybody. Leave immediately. Now, it doesn't say it explicitly in the verse, but he goes with them. So the next topic, if you see from our little handout here, is renunciation. Renunciation in this giving it up sense of renunciation, and we'll spend some time discussing the contrast of not just giving it up, but acting in a detached manner while cultivating Krishna consciousness. But this particularly is Dhritarashtra's thing. Cultivating Krishna consciousness, he had a lifetime and he didn't do that. But now at least just give up his worldly conception of I am the king and I'm the enjoyer and I'll live forever, and give that up and prepare to meet death in a noble way. So just one last thing and we'll end. In this final purport,